Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominic.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. So, we've had quite a few listeners' questions and comments since we last did a podcast, just you and I. Shall we kick off with them?
Yeah, because last week we had Ian, didn't we, from RP Developments.
Well, indeed, yeah, who went to go and see Ian at his workshop and had a good old chat with him, which went down a storm. So hopefully we're going to have a lot more guests this year. Sounds like a plan, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Graham Elliott gets in touch. He says, "Hi, I was just listening to your excellent podcast while walking our dog, and you were talking about your best Land Rover experiences. Mine was the journey home after picking it up from the previous owner in the middle of some woods in the pouring rain." Nice.
He bought it from the middle of some woods?
Apparently. "I'd wanted a 90 since I was 15 and leafing through the latest parts supplier catalogues, in brackets, no internet back then, so this must have been a while ago. The stars finally aligned and I finally bought my 90. He says, oh, hang on. Sorry. "He's wanted a 90 since he saw them in parts supplier catalogues, not he didn't buy this out of a parts supplier catalogue.
I get you.
I got my wires crossed. I'm sorry. Okay. He bought this one off Facebook Marketplace, which, as we know, is probably one of the either the best or worst places to buy a Land Rover.
It depends on the seller."
Indeed. He goes on to say, "The Facebook Marketplace advert wasn't the best and I'd noticed it had been up for a good few weeks and still hadn't sold." "After a wasted trip to Southampton the week before to look at a different one that was stunning in the pictures, it was actually awful in person." He said, when we met the seller in the middle of a forest where he was storing the 90, which doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No.
"I was smitten the second I bought it. It's a bright red soft top with possible military past because it has some military bits on it. The Facebook pictures didn't do it justice at all. And I could tell with a decent cleanup, it would be far, far better than it was even photographed. After struggling to get a phone signal to transfer the money over, we came to a deal and driving home in the pouring rain in the unfamiliar vehicle, he didn't stop smiling all the way, even when the indicators stopped working and the wiper fell off. Typical defender behaviour."
Right. Well, to be fair, he's got away with lightly then, really.
Yeah, that's not bad, really, considering you bought a defender from the middle of some woodland. But he says, "Since then, I've cleaned it all up to find it was actually very solid, which is good. Lots of nice bits. Gentle rolling restoration and general servicing to do. He's done the cam belt and fitted new seat belts and a few other bits." He says, "There's a few bits. He's got some nice stuff for Christmas, including a roll bar and a Nakatenenga aerial. Can't see me ever selling it, even though my wife hates going in it. The dog loves it, and that's all that matters. Fair play, Graham. Sounds like a good little buy, and what a good story."
Yeah, he's got quite lucky there, I think. You've got to be really careful on Facebook. We've said this numerous times to people, haven't we?
Yeah.
Some of the adverts on there can be scams.
Absolutely.
But often badly photographed.
Sometimes.
You don't get many professional photographers selling cars on Facebook, do you?
No, you don't. And actually, a bad photo and a bad description can work in your favour if you're local and you can actually go and have a look yourself.
But make sure there is an actual car.
Yes.
And not transfer money beforehand, because that's where people get caught out.
So the typical one most recently seems to be, it's still for sale, but I've got someone else coming. If you send me a deposit, then I'll sell it to you. So you get all excited and... you know, transfer
the
money.
It's a goodbye and, you've got to be so careful.
Before you know it, the advert's gone and you've been blocked on Messenger and you're never going to see your money again. So be careful. But yeah, that sounds like quite a good little buy.
Well, I will say, it's about parts catalogues, right? So who doesn't love a catalogue?
Oh, I completely agree.
So if you go onto BritParts website, you can add your details there and they'll send you a catalogue in the post.
Yes, you can. And it's so nice to actually have... The website is brilliant, obviously, but... to have, like, it feels like you say, it's kind of a nostalgic thing, isn't it? A big, thick catalogue full of really cool stuff.
It's over, like, 300 pages.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed about catalogue is, or versus website, is when you go on a website, you have to consciously type in what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Whereas a catalogue, you can look at things you don't know you need till you see them. And
exactly.
It's like a different way of, oh, that looks good. And then you start researching the part numbers, finding out how much it is, and you're building up a shopping list. It's a lot easier, I find.
And actually, even if you do know what you need, looking it up in the index and then going and finding it and looking for all the part numbers and all that stuff is actually quite nice. I like it.
Yeah. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, you are.
Because my project is underway. No more digs at me.
No, I know.
Very much.
Yeah, exactly. We've really got off to a flying start, really. Just need to identify the thousands of bolts that you've put somewhere and match them all up to the holes they go into.
I've just put in the latest issue of the magazine that I'm like a couple of page instalment.
Yes.
And what I've worked out is storing nuts and bolts in little neat piles, if you were putting it back the very next day, is absolutely, you possibly might remember where they go. 4 years later, you don't remember where they go.
It's quite a different situation, isn't it?
It's not pleasant.
I stick with my coffee tins and takeaway tubs with writing on top. I think that's the best method.
It is, and I didn't do that.
Where do you think they are? Because I've not actually seen any bolts.
Oh, mate. There's a bench. There's a box underneath a workbench.
Right.
And in there, it's just like...
Like a fruit salad of fixings.
Yeah.
Right.
I was silly.
Can't wait to sort all that lot out.
Well, you're happy, aren't we? We've got a date planned in the diary, haven't we?
We have. But you need to have the bolt sorted out by then.
Yeah, I know.
We've got heavy lifting to do that day.
No.
We've got progress to make, Steve.
We have.
Talking of, yeah.
I have made a purchase this very week.
Steve's done a buy.
Do you know, I'm really excited about this.
Yeah.
New bulkhead.
New bulkhead is on its way.
So we put, anyone that hasn't seen it already, so the project is on our YouTube page. And didn't we filmed it a couple of, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was an introduction, wasn't it?
Introduction to the project. And in that video, I show how rotten the original bulkhead actually is. And whilst, yes, it could be repaired, I just thought, yeah, I want to do this to a high standard. So I've bought a bulkhead from Richard Chassis, nonetheless.
Yes, indeed. And I do believe you went for the E-coat finish rather than galvanised.
Yes. Basically, for the very reason that galvanising, you don't get a perfect finish. So a painter or a paint shop would have to spend quite a lot of time getting it looking exactly right. If you wanted that kind of paint finish, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
Perfection. An E-coated, painted correctly, and then cavity waxed and all of the good stuff, that'll last me out.
Well, E-coat is used in new vehicle manufacture as well. So
yeah, because the primer's already on.
Yeah, though that's
essentially.
E-coating, I don't think existed back when Defenders were, well, certainly when yours was being built, and now it does. And it is a very effective rust inhibitor / corrosion protective coating. So you're already, way ahead of what it would have been new when your 90 was built. So, it's going to save a load of work, isn't it? And it's still going to last decades, not years, but decades.
And apart from putting in, because when I made the order, I'd get the order acknowledgement 3, and they send you like the plan of how to paint it based on the coating it's got, and then where it needs seam sealing.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, it just gives you like a little diagram that you follow. It's like, yeah, I could do that.
Seam seal is one of those where it's certainly, if you've seen something like an old Discovery or Range Rover and the seam seal has gone all crusty and lifted and the water's got behind it,
yeah,
that's a real, well, that's often where a lot of them start to rust, like in the footwells and the B pillars and things like that. So getting your seam sealer right, using a quality seam sealer and a decent brush to make sure you get it right in the edges with no bubbles is key.
Okay, we'll have to have a look at that.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, but it's like you want to do the best job you can.
Paint it on with a brush, don't you? Like, yeah. Just brush paint it on the edges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a thick, like, it's quite a weird consistency. It's like hummus.
Oh, nice.
It's like a pasty.
Come with a carrot stick to put it on.
Yeah, it's the same colour as well. You could probably play a pretty good prank on someone, I think.
So will that go on the E-coat a bit?
Yeah.
Put that on the E-coat, straight over. Do you have to...
You might have to key it up with or something.
Yeah.
Richards would be able to tell you.
Yeah,
sure, but
I need to read the paperwork.
You need to make it adhere because, like I say, yes, it would still take years, but once water gets underneath it, it finds it very hard to get out.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, with a defender, you've got to be a bit more with anything, really.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Anyway, I've made a purchase.
Yes, indeed.
I haven't told my wife yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've got 3 or 4 weeks before, because the lead time at the moment, because...
But you've paid for it, so surely the...
No.
Oh, do you pay when it gets delivered?
Well, before they send an invoice, when it's manufactured, you then pay.
Right, okay.
And then arrange the delivery or collection.
Got you. Oh, very highly, yeah. Right. She'll love it anyway. She'll
use
the flipping thing out of your garage. So
pulled the trigger this week. So, yeah.
Exciting times. Talking of projects, if you're listening to this on the day it got released, our latest YouTube video on my Series 3 re-chassis will be live for your viewing pleasure.
Displeasure.
hopefully pleasure. But yeah, check that out if you want to. Obviously, the Land Rover Monthly YouTube channel, we're really concentrating on that this year.
Now, I've had a look at, I've had a sneaky preview. Well, basically, I filmed it, didn't I?
You did. You were a professional cameraman.
Yeah, basically. You were in a particularly good mood. So anyone that's seen Grumpy Martin can watch Happy Martin.
Yeah. What a treat.
Yeah.
The reason I
don't see Happy Martin very often, so it's a pleasure to see.
Cheers, mate. It's when I knew that it would be done and finished that day, so I was really, really keen to get it, you know, all bolted back together and go and drive it, which we did in the video. So
do you notice when you're in a good mood, how when you're optimistic and you're in a good mood, how the whole day goes even better?
Yes.
Nothing goes wrong. It kind of all happens perfectly.
I remember that day. We'd already made quite good progress on a lot of different areas and things were really coming together and it was looking great. And I remember asking either you or Neil for the time and you were like, oh, it's just gone 12. And I thought it would be like 4 PM because you've been struggling and everything's been fighting you.
Of course, yeah.
And it eats into your day. But actually, that just goes to show how much we got done in such a little time.
It was a really nice day.
Yeah.
And it comes across on the video. So yeah, check it out.
You can also, if you're going to our Malvern Spares Day on the 2nd of February, check out my Land Rover Series 3 will be there in the restoration.
So you'll be listening to this 3 or 4 days before the event.
Yeah. So if you weren't going to go, because it'll be really good.
Yeah, it's shaping up really nicely. The restoration hall and a few clubs.
Mm. It's kind of grown bigger than we first anticipated, it's fair to say.
I reckon the new hall will be full.
Yeah.
Which is always a good sign.
And it's, as we've alluded to before, kind of a mixture of stuff, predominantly Land Rover, obviously, but we've also got a tractor club and mini club, I believe.
Yeah, we've got the Mini Cooper register. We've got Triumph TR register. We've got a few bits and pieces, not all British, though.
Yeah, yeah.
We're basically sticking to that theme. And yeah, some good stuff coming along.
There you go.
So bring your money.
Kick some tyres of some other vehicles. And of course, the main event is obviously the big auto jumble.
So I can't wait, right? Because I'm going to, this is the plan.
Are you going dashboard shopping?
Well, I'm going shopping, just to see
what was.
Hopefully by then I'll have a bit more of an idea of all the used parts that I want to buy. I don't want to buy just all new stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And you want to keep it looking like it's a 40-year-old Land Rover, but yeah. So I'm going to get rid of the high-vis jacket because that'll be first thing in the morning when I've done the work. Then I'm going to go shopping.
And if you're a trader and you're listening, be nice and smiley and happy because it makes our day.
I was going to say, if you're a trader and you see Steve, charge him double. Don't say that.
No.
I thought that's what you were going to say.
Be cheerful. It'll be good. Get the day kicked off.
I absolutely love these days.
It is.
I love our events.
Yeah. And LRM Live is shaping up to be a gem as well.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about at the minute.
Back at Malvern in May. Yeah. Full steam ahead with booking trade and all sorts. So we've got some cracking traders booked, haven't we?
And do you know what's interesting? So you get your trade that come every, have followed us year one, year two.
Yeah.
They almost like, yeah, of course we're coming.
Yeah,
so they
aren't going to
ring them. They go, yeah, of course we're coming. So, but a lot of people who have been ringing us are new people they've never been before.
It's so good.
Big traders as well. It's like really good.
Really, really exciting. And yeah, we're chuffed with it, aren't we? It's going to be a great weekend.
Well, I will say,
if you are listening to this on the Wednesday, you've only got a few days left if you want to get on the early bird tickets to book for day and for camping. So be sure to get on the website and book your tickets ASAP.
Oh, yeah, there's big savings to make.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's still a great value weekend, even at, you know, normal ticket price, but you can save a few quid. And the car park's free, isn't it?
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, we've brought that up before, but the parking is free.
You don't have to pay to leave a lunch.
Free parking.
What a bargain.
I mean, what?
Anyway.
You know we should charge for it.
Nah, that'd be a silly thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Let's move on. Malcolm Campbell's been in touch. He says, I've been a podcast listener since the beginning and love the format. It's just like being down the pub with other enthusiast mates talking about Land Rover stuff. Cheers, Malcolm.
We're missing one crucial element.
Yeah, we are. At the moment, we've got coffee instead of beer.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll be able to rectify that. We're going to do some live podcast recordings at events throughout the year, and I'm sure there won't be coffee involved in them, but there might well be a cold pint of something.
Better not be. Well, right. I can have a podcast after about 5 pints. That'd be really funny.
Hilarious. Yeah. Anyway.
I might even start laughing at your jokes.
After the Christmas/New Year editions and you guys talking up the YouTube videos, I thought I'd mention two of my favourites if you didn't already know them. Oh, yeah, because on our Christmas Day one, we sort of put out some of our favourite Land Rover YouTube channels, if you got bored.
Oh, yes, we did.
Christmas break. He's chipped in with Foreman and Wilmslow Series 1 restoration. who's apparently an Australian guy in the US. I haven't heard of them before, but that sounds pretty cool.
Nor have I.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, thanks for that recommendation. Yeah, I will.
He also, one I have heard of is Croker versus Rover. You must have seen that.
No.
Have you not?
No, where have I been?
Where have you been? He's Australian as well. Jeff Croker, I think his name is. He's mostly series, but he's done a Discovery One restoration as well. That's really, really good quality, informative video. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one, Malcolm, I think. Sorry, he's actually from New Zealand. Oh, that would have upset him if he's heard that. Sorry, he's Kiwi. He's not Australian. I do apologise. But no, really, really good channel. So Croker versus Rover, check it out. It's good.
Cool.
He goes on to say, cheers for all the content. Keep it up. From Malcolm Campbell, who's a Discovery 2 owner, 2004 Disco 2, a greenlaner and enthusiastic mechanic. Well, you have to be, he finishes with. And a very cool picture of him laning in his Disco 2. There he is, look.
That Disco 2 looks really cool.
Smart, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
It's good, it's standard. It looks...
It's got a... It looks nice. It's got a winch bumper on it and it's got some big terrain because it's not, like, overly dumb.
The tyres is what sets it off.
Yeah. I can't quite see what they are. I might be going full geek and see what tyres he's got. If I manage to guess what tyres you've got, Malcolm, do I win a prize? Because it's only showing them from the side. Oh, I'm not confident. Are they Toyo Open Country Muds? No, they look too aggressive.
I reckon a Goodyear.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, that's not very...
For those of you who aren't in the picture, we were looking at the tyre.
For the record.
It's too far away, we can't see.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Another listener, Mr. Ian Kelly, gets in touch off the back of me waffling on about Discovery 3 when I went over to my mate's house and had a look at his Disco 3 for the non-starting problems.
Yes.
He says, hi team, I've been listening to the podcast since you started. Another day one. Cheers, Ian. Good old boy.
And sticking with us, which is lovely to hear.
Yeah, it's good. This is podcast number 36. Can you believe
that?
No. Only seems like yesterday.
It's your age, isn't it?
No, I'm younger than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I bet you wish you were 36.
Only 36, I'm going to hit this stone. What are you doing, this 2K Tuesday thing?
Yeah, I know, dangerous times.
Yeah.
He says, I've been listening to the podcast that you started and I love it. It keeps me company while driving to work and I love the format of two friends talking about things they love. Sounds quite similar to Malcolm's email. They're not the same person, I promise. He says, in the last podcast, which isn't now the last podcast, discussed checking the electrics on Disco 3. I'm currently trying to work out some issues with my Discovery 3 and think there might be an earthing fault. Could you advise on the best way to diagnose electrical faults? I do understand this might be a big topic, and if you can't cover it, just telling me where to find the earth straps would be really helpful. I can't find a map of them or anywhere that tells me even which wheel arch liner I need to pull for the battery to chassis one. I'm a magazine subscriber. If you've already covered it, can you let me know which article it's in, please? I don't believe we have covered it specifically. There will be electrical guides in Land Rover Monthly, but I don't think we've...
It's not something that I remember.
We've covered Disco 3 specifically. So your big earth cable is on the driver's side. If you unclip the rear half of the driver's side front wheel arch liner, there's three big connectors, two or three, I forget. And a big, like, braided earth strap that runs from the body to the engine or from the engine to the chassis. Either way, it's a big earth strap and they always corrode and sometimes the end just falls off and then they don't earth anything. So I would check that first. You've also got one on the transfer box, so I'd check that. And you've also got smaller ones. Anywhere there's a fuse box, generally, you will have earth cables that go to little studs on the body. So under the bonnet on the right-hand side, as you look at it, there'll be earth studs there. Just basically check the wires aren't corroded and give the maybe take the nuts off, give them a little wire brush up to clear any corrosion or debris and then put them back together.
Do you put grease on them? On the battery?
I never have done on battery terminals. Some people go crazy with the grease, but I've never...
Oh, nothing worse. No, like battery terminals, yeah.
I've never seen one corrode. I don't know why you would grease them.
Petroleum jelly and stuff like that.
Petroleum jelly has its place on, like, the fenders and series. Like, sometimes I'll put jelly on, like, the bulb holders and the connectors. Or electro... I forget the name of it. This grease that's designed for electrical connections because it keeps the water out.
Ah, okay.
Because, as you know...
I was just going to say, I put it all back, actually.
Really?
Without putting any...
And it's all right?
Oh, no, I had to... So my Defender...
Yeah.
For listeners, because you know what it was, took the bulb out because it stopped working on the way back from filming your Land Rover.
Right.
I got a double, you know, when the indicator double...
Yeah, it flashes really quick.
...really fast. Mm-hmm. And I see that it was the near side rear bulb. I thought, oh, okay. I carry spare bulbs with me.
Yeah.
So pulled up on the driveway, got the little screwdriver out. I thought I'd just quickly change the bulb on my way in. It did, and as I put it out, the two little pins on the, where would the pins be? I can't remember. Oh yeah, took the bulb holder off.
Yeah.
Because the new bulb didn't make it work.
Yes.
So I thought, there must be some water in here because it was absolutely raining, horrible. And then all the two little metal pins had corroded in the in the actual.
So it's a female plug.
Female,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But then the bulb holder is male, and where it plugs on, the pins break off. Basically, they get weak and snap off.
I had to get some really, really like sharp pliers to pull the pins out.
Yeah.
Sprayed it with WD-40. It washed all the mud, all the rust out.
So in that area,
I had to get a new bulb holder. It was all crap.
It's so common on Defenders because there's no real protection. You've got that silly plastic flap at the back of the tub, but it doesn't really do anything. In that, like, for things that are in the firing line of your wheels, then I would use a little bit of petroleum jelly or electro something grease. Someone will tell me what it's called. Dielectric grease, that's it.
Okay.
But no, I wouldn't bother putting it on. I don't understand why all it's doing on battery terminals is making dirt stick to them. I don't know why you would.
Oh, it's horrible. You've got to change the battery and your hands are absolutely covered.
Yeah, well, you need to whip the earth lead off the battery to do something, and it's like an absolute, you know, white grease or lithium grease everywhere. I've never understood it personally. But
So it'd be interesting to find out if that fixes that problem.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really go into detail on what the problem is, but if you want to drop us another email, I will have a little look into it. But actually, that reminds me, you can go, if you sign up to Land Rover Monthly Magazine on Exact Editions, you can go back to 2015 and all the tech guides are on there. So if you want, I mean, that's tons and tons and tons of content for not much money, head to Exact. It's great, and it's all searchable as well.
It's really, really good, though.
Yeah. Talking of electrical things, I haven't used the sat nav in my Freelander 2 since I bought it until the other day when my phone was running out of battery and I thought, oh, I don't really know my way home.
Yeah, they're not great. They weren't great when they were new.
No, they weren't.
To be honest.
Let me tell you, they have not improved with age.
Not like you, this.
Well, no. To give you to anyone who's sort of familiar with East Anglia or the Midlands, it didn't know the Catthorpe interchange had got rid of the roundabout.
Is this junction A14 M6?
Yeah. It thought the roundabout was still there.
I remember, do you know what? It's been that long that I forgot that was even a thing. That was a nightmare, that junction.
I remember when I used to go on training at Land Rover and I used to come back on a Friday evening from Leamington or Gaydon back to my house in Cambridgeshire. You'd sit there forever.
Do you know on the Google Maps, right? The A14 there, that stretch, they still called it the M6.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where did the M6 run up to then?
Well, A14 used to run to that junction.
Right.
And then the M6 would pick up sort of junction one. What they've done now is fantastic compared to the M1 and the M6.
Yeah, there. Yeah. Well, yeah.
But that was an absolute hassle.
I can't remember queuing there. But yeah, the Catthorpe. Oh, anyway, my sat-nav, we digress slightly onto the UK road network. But my I confused the sat-nav by driving from the A14 onto the M6. And it was like, hang on a minute, you're not going round a roundabout. What are you doing? You haven't slowed down. And it had a little meltdown and then it came back. But yeah, it's a really, really not very good system.
No.
I've heard good things about Xtrons. Have you heard of Xtrons?
No.
They're like a replacement head unit that you fit and it's got Apple CarPlay on it and its own sat-nav.
Oh, no, okay.
It's like a modern integration that you can run your phone through. So I might look into that.
They're quite expensive. I don't know about Xtron. I've heard of... you mean replace the entire head unit?
Yeah. The sat-nav screen, you get rid of that and you put it where that used to be.
I don't know if they're expensive, but I've heard of an update in other car types with Apple CarPlay, £1,000.
Yeah, I don't think they're that dear for Freelander, but I'll have to look into it because it does need I rely on my phone for nav and music and everything, and it would make so much more sense to just have it actually stream through that. But have you seen the Stinger for Defenders? the whole like almost replacement center dash for TDCI defenders, and it has a massive, like, almost not quite as big as a Tesla screen, but it's like super modern.
Yeah, I have.
They're really smart, aren't they?
Yeah, they're, we had them in the products actually in the mag once, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 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 They're they seem to be getting quite popular. I've seen a few pop up in vehicles that are for sale, and I think, yeah, they've done a neat job of that.
Good OEM plus finish.
Yeah, because you can obviously fit double DINs to normal Defender centre dashes, can't you? But I find that they sit a bit low. Anyone else have that problem? Like, you sit quite high in a Defender and then the screen is kind of low in the back.
I can imagine you would, yeah.
Whereas the Stinger one comes up a lot higher, and it's, yeah, really nice bit of kit. I'd like to have a play with one.
So I was always going to do double DIN in my TD590 because it's poverty spec. It doesn't have a radio.
Yeah.
But that aperture, that isn't the right thing for a double DIN.
Right.
So you'd need to change that centre console on a TD5 Defender.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because yours has got the big plastic centre console,
yeah,
doesn't
it? Yeah, so you can go to like Mud, UK, and you get a single DIN or double DIN.
Yes.
Version.
Yeah.
I have one in stock, actually, double DIN.
Oh, okay.
But I've never done it.
Mm. Well, why have a radio in your TD5 and you can listen to the dulcet tones of 5-cylinder turbo diesel?
I don't think you'd hear it.
Just sing along to yourself as you go down the road.
Mm. Yeah.
We have like a rolling playlist of songs when we come into LRN Towers. We won't bore you with any of them, but they're quite entertaining.
I call it music Tourette's.
It is a bit like that, isn't it? But it's only ever the intro because we don't know all the words.
I don't know any words.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Anyway, isn't it time you did Feature of the Week?
Well, Steve, as you all know, the latest issue of Land Rover Monthly has gone on sale today, if you're listening on the day this podcast comes out. So yes, it is very much time to talk about Feature of the Week. And Feature of the Week is the cover story from the March issue of Land Rover Monthly, which is probably unlike any Land Rover you've ever seen on the cover of a Land Rover magazine before.
Never seen one like that before.
I don't think there's many of them about that are built like this, to be fair. You've probably, if you've spent any time on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, whatever, you may have seen clips of this Land Rover going sideways with the back tyres on fire around Mondello and other racetracks. It's having the crack rally race drift teams, Defender 90. And what a cool thing it is.
That's Billy You, that is.
I love off-the-wall stuff like this, and they've done an absolutely amazing job. From something that started out as a workhorse in the owner's possession, he basically bought an LS3, so GM V8 engine for another project, then changed his mind on doing that project and thought, oh yeah, I've got a Defender sat over there. Why don't I put that in there? And while I'm at it, why don't I do loads and loads of other mods to make it a drift car, essentially, which is what I've done. So yes, this thing is, well, as you will have seen from the cover, unlike any other Defender you've probably ever seen. It's converted to rear-wheel drive, uses BMW front suspension with modifications to give it loads and loads of steering lock. And yeah, it's got a big, powerful GM V8 under the bonnet, and it lights up the back tyres on demand. And it's got all sorts of race and rally touches, like a hydraulic handbrake, full roll cage, fuel cell, swirl pot, all the motorsport stuff, but in a Defender.
Really cool. Really, really cool. Yeah, it looks great on the page.
Yeah. So, I mean, I won't give too much more away because you'll have to buy the magazine to get the full lowdown and the full story on it. But yeah, I'm chuffed with how that came out. The feature, Dan Sherwood went down south to the South Coast and got this in the bag, and what a fantastic job he's done, I think. Yeah, I'm absolutely made up with that. So, yeah, that's in the March issue of Land Rover Monthly. Be sure to go and grab yourself a copy.
So, moving on, what's product of the week? We didn't even have a product of the week last week. That shortchanged.
We were a bit busy, weren't we, talking to Ian. So we forewent product of the week. This week, we're going to have Lock-On Impact Socket Set, which is from Sealy, at the very, very reasonable price for the quality of the sockets you're getting, £239.94. Basically, you know what it's like. You get rusty bolts and nuts and stuff on Land Rovers, and you get your socket on there, and there's a bit too much play, and it rounds off, and then you're swearing and, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Reaching for the angry spanner, as you call it.
It is angry spanner.
Well, these are specially machined. They have specially machined flutes in their walls, which give a 85%, sorry, they grip onto fasteners, which are up to 85% rounded off, which sounds pretty cool. I'd love to try
it. It's Land Rover.
Yeah.
Anything I've ever had anything to do with.
Incredibly rusty, and certainly fixings like maybe under tray bolts and things like that, which have been on and off more times than the proverbial. This comes in a really heavy duty case, sockets from 10mm to 32mm, and they're all colour coded for fast identification. So if you spend a lot of time in your workshop working on rusty old junk, this looks like a good buy.
You probably only need to buy them once, you got them for life.
You would, yeah, exactly. Mm. And they are product number AK5636M, should you wish to buy them, from sealy.co.uk.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so.
When you know when you do, you know when you've got fixings that are slightly rounded off and you don't have those?
Yeah.
Right? So you've got your 16 side, haven't you? Is it 16? How many sides?
Well, the standard socket is six-sided.
Yeah, six-sided. Then you've got the multiple one.
Yeah.
How many sides
are there? 12 point.
12 point. Yeah. Oh, you call them 12 points, not sides. But like, I always find to use the six-sided ones better.
Yeah, they are, because you've got more purchase on the fixing. So you've got the flats that engage on the flats.
Of course. The
12-point ones really come into their own in really tight spaces, because obviously with a six-sided one, you've only got six opportunities to get the socket on.
Okay.
With a 12, they're a much finer drive, but you pay for that with grip. So you're much more likely to round a bolt off with a 12-point socket than a six-sided one.
Yeah, I certainly have learned that lesson.
Which is why you need both.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are pretty cool. They make some good stuff, don't they, Sealy?
Talking of rounding fixings off, you remember the exhaust manifolds that came off my V8 when we were doing the chassis swap because all the studs snapped off when I tried to undo the downpipes?
Didn't you buy new manifolds?
I bought second-hand ones that had new studs in for time saving.
For time saving, yeah, I remember.
Well, I have recently restudded my old manifolds because they were just sat in the corner of the garage and I thought I should do something with them.
I wondered what you were doing, because didn't you share a picture or something on your
I put it on my Instagram story, and basically, I'm glad I did get those other ones with the fresh studs in, because they put up a fight, to say the least, the old studs, because the majority of them had snapped off anyway. And I thought, oh, I'll be all right. Once I've got them in a vise, I'll be able to get them nice and hot, use a blowtorch to heat the surrounding metal up, and then a pair of Stilsons or grips, and I'll just twist the old studs out. Nope, they all snapped off as well.
Oh, just by a bit. Do you think blowtorch doesn't get it hot enough?
Potentially. I mean, they were cherry red, so there should have been enough.
Oh, okay.
It's map gas, like what plumbers use.
Yeah, I know. The copper. Yeah, yeah.
But it does generally do the job, and I tried quenching them and, you know, working them back and forth, but no, they just snapped. So I had a painstaking process of trying to drill all the snapped studs off straight.
So why did you do that rather than just throw them in the scrap bar?
Because they're quite sought after now. They're carburetor, early Renault V8. So
will you sell them or keep them?
I haven't decided yet. I'll probably keep them for spares. I would like to, down the line, build up a slightly more powerful V8 for Series 3, because it's got that 101 low compression V8 in it at the moment, which isn't exactly a powerhouse.
No, but reliable, though.
Very reliable, yeah. I don't think it's done many miles at all, but it's sort of like it uses all the fuel that a V8 uses, but you kind of feel like you should be getting a bit more performance.
It's shortchange. Yeah, I was like that when I had that stage one V8.
Yeah,
made all the noise, used all the fuel. This is really not that good.
I believe they're low compression too, and they have the restrictors in the carbs.
Yeah, we took them out. Yeah, we did. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, the guys actually was when we did the restoration of that, or the rebuild, it was done at Brit Park, in their workshop, and there was a guy that works there that used to do it for a job. So he bought all his tuning stuff in and...
Oh, really?
Got the carbs absolutely bang on.
That is something I need to do with mine, really, because I don't... I mean, it starts and runs fine. It's pretty smooth, but I think maybe I might be barking up the wrong tree looking at getting a like a 3.9 or something, when actually I don't know if that one is set up to run, if it's optimized, you know, ignition timing and carb settings and things like that. So I'll probably get that done first.
But not spoiling the ending of the YouTube video that you would have been talking about. We did go down the road in it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
And I thought it went down the road pretty well, to be fair.
What I have to remember as well is, don't forget, when we did the video that's been live for a while now, when we were going to fit an overdrive as part of all the upgrades.
Ah, yes.
The overdrive didn't fit, or rather it did physically fit, but then we couldn't drive anywhere because the gears didn't mesh, because I didn't realise that that transfer box already has an Ashcroft high ratio gear set in.
And look at it, the two gears side by side, there was a distinct difference.
Yeah, so we took the I don't know what you'd call it, input gear out of the transfer box, which is normally replaced by the overdrive. And then we went to go drive it away, didn't we? And it wouldn't move because the gears didn't mesh anymore.
Do you know what, though? We were standing there and you were like, hang on, why? We even checked, like, the prop shafts were connected. And
yeah.
You start to check things that are...
There was seemingly no reason why it shouldn't move. And the only thing we had changed was the overdrive, put the overdrive on. And sure enough, when we took it back off and compared it to the gear, there was no way it was going to drive. So, yeah. So what I'm getting at is that V8 seems a bit sluggish, but actually not only is it pulling a higher ratio transfer box gear, but I've also fitted like 33 inch mud tires as well.
Yes.
So... It might well be pokier than I give it credit for, but because it's geared up and has big tyres on it, I've probably killed off any performance I would get anyway.
Yes, well, yeah, good thinking. Yeah. I thought it felt like it was quick enough.
I mean, it's quicker than a 2.25, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But the other thing, of course, to consider is the more power you go for, the more likely you are to break stuff down the line. So I'd have to upgrade the gearbox, which I'd probably then have to upgrade. You know, get an LT230 transfer box and you soon...
Sounds like a second rebuild.
Exactly, yeah. A short sort of power upgrade soon becomes a major project.
So you taking it to the LRM event 2nd of Feb?
Yeah.
At Malvern. Mm-hmm. The last time you drove it down there. I drove it, didn't I? In the car park.
I had
the worst experience driving a Series 3 ever.
That was the first time I took it there ever, when it was on Federma Maxima. They're like a remold tyre done in the style of the old Firestone Sat.
Yeah, it was such a harsh thing.
Which looked great, but the sidewalls are like made out of lead. There is no give in the sidewalls whatsoever. So not only did it have no give in the tyres, but the suspension was, all four leaf springs were lock solid as well. But now it's running more modern tyres and Britpart parabolic springs with nice dampers all round. So it actually does ride not too bad.
Not on the roads you live, the Fen roads.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pleased with it. Between you and me, it's booked into having a nicer exhaust. Oh, talking of exhausts, big shame if you haven't already heard, Steve Parker Limited seems to have ceased.
Yeah, I had heard that.
I thought that company would be going forever. I'm a bit sad. I'm really sad about that.
Have they been going, what, since the late 70s?
I would have thought.
I think I think something tells me it was either 78 or 1980 they were going from.
I don't know the history back that far, but certainly in every Land Rover magazine I've ever picked up, they've had an advert in there. If you're not au fait with who Steve Parker Limited are, they do loads and loads of engine conversion bits for putting V8s in series and TDIs in 90s and 110s and series motors and like full kits to bolt an engine where it shouldn't be. And it's a real shame that they look to be no more.
I think it's probably a sign of the times that engine Steve Parker was always famous for putting like Essex engines, Ford engines into Land Rovers. I had one, a lightweight with a Steve Parker conversion, and now my Land Rover has a conversion, Steve Parker conversion, to convert to TDI.
Yeah, that's right.
Aspirated.
Yeah, they must have sold a few of those kits.
Really popular, but fewer people are doing that now.
Yeah,
you know, they're more likely put the natural aspirated engine back in. So it's probably one of the times, and things have evolved, which is, depends which side of the fence you're on, but it's kind of unfortunate.
Definitely. I mean, material as well. Metal's not got any cheaper, but like the cost of materials and everything else have gone up. So it must be a difficult... Obviously, they're a part supplier as well, but they're best known for their conversion kits and exhaust kits.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, my current exhaust, which is on the Series 3 V8, although modified, was originally a Steve Parker conversion exhaust.
Yeah, as is mine. So I don't know what whether someone's going to buy up some of their bits and pieces to sell on. I don't know. Don't know what the score is.
Hopefully, yeah, we'll have a bit more of a story, a proper insight into what's happened in the new issue of Land Rover Monthly. Not the current one that's just gone on sale, but the next one we should have a bit more detail. But yeah, real shame to see such an institution unfortunately close its doors. Mm. So, but where I was going with that was...
Exhaust.
Yes, my Series 3 is booked in for an exhaust with Dan at Demand Engineering, which I'm very excited about.
Someone's doing well.
Well, the thing is, Steve, now that it looks all nice and shiny underneath, despite having slightly muddy axles, I thought...
Well, no one's mentioned that on YouTube.
Well...
About the state of the axles.
No, no. But, yeah, I thought, as I say, my front section, the conversion exhaust, been repaired loads of times, and I've had to, like, bash it in so it clears in places, and it's all a bit of a lash-up. So I thought, it deserves to have a nice exhaust. So Dan's going to hook me up, and we're going to... you know, shoot some video and do some behind the scenes stuff and maybe even record a podcast with him if he's up for it.
Yeah, have you asked him?
I believe I've broached the subject. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you haven't breached it.
I've broached it. I've definitely broached it, not breached it. Anyway, yes, we're going to do a podcast and, you know, I'm just going to sit a microphone in front of him and have a chat with him for an hour.
Yeah, just don't tell him. Because people get nervous.
Element of surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No, what could possibly go wrong?
So we have some guests lined up. I'm not going to give any names away yet because some people don't know they're doing it yet.
No, indeed.
We're going to rock up and say, yeah, oh yeah, by the way, we're recording this.
But yeah, no, I'm doing one tomorrow, in fact.
Oh.
Exciting.
Yeah, without me, you see, that's twice now.
Who else did I do without you? Jimmy DeVille. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I'll tell you what, we've got some real good ones in the bag already, which we can't release just yet. Some really, really interesting...
Yes, another one without me.
Two, actually.
What?
Two.
Oh. I don't even know about the other one.
Yeah, so stay tuned. And if you haven't already, can you like click follow or subscribe on Apple or Spotify or whatever you use to take in your podcast content? Because it really helps us out. And if you want, leave a little review or a rating. Anyway, I'm going to stop banging on about that now. Yeah, it's going to be good, though. I'm excited.
Yeah, I've got a few people lined up on my travels. Which will be quite interesting because no one wants to listen to me and you rabbit on too much.
No, I'm sick of hearing from you.
I was sick of it.
Like, but there's, do you know what? I wish I could book like a month and go all the way around the UK doing podcasts with all the people from the scene who have been like either newcomers who are like new, fresh, interesting, cool businesses. And of course the legends from years gone by through the Land Rover scene who are still like, doing their thing today and the stories that are out there, we really need to go and get them. I think we'll have to make a point of going and just doing a big tour with our recording equipment. And
that wouldn't be good.
How good would that be?
It's kind of the reason why we do this podcast. Remember some of the conversations we've had and we've often said, if this was recorded, it'd be brilliant
for
people to sort of hear.
And now it can be.
It can be.
And also we're going to do live ones. We're going to do live ones at LRM Live and at Billing.
Yeah, Billing Off-Road Show. Don't know about timings yet.
No, it's early days.
It's early days, but we will be there.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm really ready.
We want questions. It's easy to answer questions than trying to preempt what people want us to talk about.
We're going to have a microphone in our hand for a lot of the Billing Off-Road Show because we'll be, of course, up on the stage doing the show and tell as well. So hopefully, microphone in one hand, pint in the other.
Never manage that. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to get. I'm not going to drink.
You've said that the last 2 years.
Yeah, standard by an empty shower block.
Yeah, that was good.
Just throws. Cool.
But yeah, LRM, if you're going to go to two events this year, two shows, if you want to call them shows, LRM Live and Billing Off Road Show, for crying out loud, book your tickets because it's going to be a really, really fun
Yeah, definitely
time.
Both of them. They're the ones I look forward to. Well, they, in fairness, thinking when this one goes out, in February, we've got the Expo.
Yeah, that's
good. Staffordshire, really enjoyed it. We spoke about this on New Year's Day, didn't we?
We gave a whole list.
Our sort of show calendar, but... I do like the Expo, sort of first indoor.
It's kind of a shopping experience.
It is, yeah. It's like a vintage, really.
I got some really, really, really cool stuff. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And if you see me there and you want a sticker, I'll have a pocket full of LRM podcast stickers as well.
Yes. And we will at our event in
Malden. Giving the stickers out.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the Spares Day, which will be the Sunday after you hear this podcast, if you listen to it go live. Because, as we've already said, as well as the restoration, we're going to have Boom Racing there with their... scale Land Rovers, series 2s, 3s,
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that.
Custom scale 4x4 build. So, yeah, always good fun. And, yeah, I'll try not to geek out too hard, but I'm not making any promises.
I know, because do you reckon you'll buy one?
Yeah, I will. Not right now, because I've got a bit other stuff on, but I will get one, definitely. And I want to do a scale replica of my Series 3.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Because you can buy scale winches and like tilts and everything now. You can buy everything. It's really, really cool. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. I don't know if the 30-year-old NATO green will work on plastic if I'm going to do the body the same colour, but I'll have to find the equivalent.
Thin it right down?
Yeah, maybe.
Do an airbrush.
Do an airbrush. Talking of which, you've got cracking with a couple of model Land Rovers recently, haven't you?
I found one of the Haynes ones in my garage.
Right.
And I have assembled it. But I can't put the chassis, the screws it comes with, you can't put the chassis into the body.
How do you mean?
I don't know.
I don't follow.
So I've glued it all together.
Did you buy all the extortionate paint that you need, or was that for a different...
No, that's for another one. I found that in the garage as well. A Series 3 109 with a Sankey trailer.
Oh, cool.
It's quite a small scale.
Right.
But yeah, the paint... I think if you bought all the paints on the Airfix, it's like £35 or something.
And the kit probably would have been £20, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the kit would... It's probably why it's like £14.99. But yeah, it's like £50 for a model. But it's quite therapeutic.
Yeah. Well, I used to do loads of Airfix when I was...
Yeah, I've never really done it before. Must have come of age or something, I don't know.
Yeah, well, they're quite nostalgic. Well, we said before, didn't we? Like, that stuff that you really loved as a kid comes back round, doesn't it? When you've got time and, you know, a bit of cash to get back into whatever you were into then, it's perfect, isn't it?
Spare cash, you say?
Well, yeah, hard to come by when you've got Land Rovers hard together, but yeah, all good fun. But yeah, I don't know, really. I don't know. I'm excited, though. This year's going to be a good one, definitely.
And we've got a lot on.
Yeah, we have got a lot on.
And I'm still really motivated. Right, so you know what I said, right? I have to get my mind into doing my project.
To be obsessed with it.
I have to be obsessed with things to get it done. And I'm obsessed. So it keeps me awake.
Well, that's good, because then when you see progress, it's all the sweeter.
That's why I pulled the trigger on the bulkhead.
Yeah.
Not that I'm actually ready for it, but I know that's a real massive dry, you know, part to have purchased.
Well, you're not far off ready for it, because once you've found all your bolts and we've identified them and the engine box and transfer box are together and on the chassis, the bulkhead's the next thing to go on.
It kind of is. So like you said, dry build it first.
Yeah, definitely.
Count how many shims you're using, get it all level, and then take the bits, get it painted.
Yeah.
You have to choose a colour, yeah.
Quotes from body shops.
Yeah, first. I do.
Yeah.
It's going to be tricky.
You
can choose a colour. I'm going
to
struggle with
it. It will be tricky to choose a colour, because once you've done it, there's no going back.
Because you can have any colour you want.
Yeah. That's great, though.
I know.
It was blue originally, wasn't it? Was it blue?
Yeah, it was. Funnily enough, it had been painted in marine blue over the top of what was Stratos blue.
Oh, I was trying to remember the name of the colour.
Yeah, Stratos blue is the same blue is called two different names.
Is it Arles blue as well? Is that a different one?
No, I think that's a later...
Slightly later, isn't it?
VDI.
But it's a similar...
Similar.
Shape.
Stratos blue, when it's polished and, you know, perfect, it's a gorgeous colour. But I don't think I'm going to go back to that.
Well, like you say, the world's your oyster, isn't it? You can pick from anything your heart desires, but you've sort of narrowed it down to a solid colour rather than a metallic, because... It's money, isn't it?
Well, I've been reading up on and watching a bit of YouTube about paint. And then if you paint something metallic, there's so many more coats and so much more prep. And the cost will just spiral.
Also, I guess it probably...
It's not that kind of Land Rover, really.
No, I suppose it's going to show up the ripples and stuff in the bodywork a lot more, because the more gloss you have, the more the light hits it. And then it's sort of...
Yeah, I think a solid colour. And then... yeah, it's still going to cost a few thousand quid.
Oh, yeah, it's not going to be cheap.
It's not going to be cheap.
But then again, you'll have a half a life then, won't you?
You have, yeah, you've got something to show for it.
I was going back to the metallic colours making the bodywork look ripply. I always smiled when I'd see, like, pretty much brand new Range Rover L322s come into the workshop when I worked at the dealer. And, you know, like the lower half of the door is like cladding, isn't it? And then you've got the bit that the mudguard bolts to at the front at the bottom of the wing. So the door and the wing a metal, but then you've got this plastic cladding around the bend. Well, the plastic was always warped, so the bodywork looked pins like beautifully straight.
No.
and like the paint looked glassy smooth, and then you'd get down to the bottoms of the doors where the piece was for the bottom of the front wing and like the cladding along the side, and it would be like the waves of the ocean, and you just thought you probably could have done a nicer job on that.
I probably could have done.
Yeah. I suppose if you smash them off-road, then they're easy to replace. But then how many brand new L322s went off-road?
Off-road to the garage?
Well, the less said about that, the better. I still maintain they're a good car and I would like one. But we're not going to get hung up on that. There's also, in possibly next week's podcast, I'm going to dive a little bit more into the latest issue that's just come out, because it really does have probably one of the most diverse ranges of Land Rovers in it, in any magazine, for quite a while. So
that's why I've only just, I mean, this is hot off the press today.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've literally seen it for the first time. And, you know, I've been on the magazine for like 14 years and it's still real lovely to see the latest issue. Yeah. We see it in its component form, don't we?
Yes.
Over the previous month. And then to see the finished article in your hand, it's still, I still get a kick from it.
Oh, I still get, yeah, it's still a buzz, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it comes to life in paper, and like, even because I get it as do other subscribers, still get it delivered through the door, and I still look for, you know, still,
yeah, you're not in every single day, so it's like you may as well have it delivered.
Yeah, so I still get that eagerness and that anticipation for it to come, so I can see it for the first time, even though I've already read the content like two or three times while we put it together. So good. So yeah, if you don't already buy LRM, head to your...
Yeah, do us a favour and buy it.
Yeah, actually, we'll show you something. Don't go to the shop and buy it. Subscribe. It's much better and it's cheaper and you get it delivered.
Mm.
Why wouldn't you?
That's a really good point.
But anyway, that's enough upselling.
Or
just selling, yeah, in general. But yeah, it's keen. I'm excited for tomorrow. I'm getting on the spanners tomorrow.
What are you up to?
I'm helping a friend fit a winch to his Land Rover.
Okay.
Oh, I've got another little project on the go as well. I've got a lot on the go at the moment. I'm not going to have time for your novelty.
Oh, so the deal when we shook on this?
I've got a friend of mine's getting married in June or July, I think.
Oh, dear.
And his other half has got a Series 2A, a really, really, might even be a Series 2, actually. It is a Series 2. I think it's a 58 Series 2, so one of the very first. And they want to use it for their wedding car, but it is in bits. It's in kit form at the moment, so I need to put some time aside and put that back together for them.
When's their wedding?
June or July.
Oh, crikey.
So
how long?
It's been off the road a long time. The wings are off it. The doors are off it. There's no front end. It's not turned a wheel or run for many years. So that'll be fun. I might do a little video on that if he's keen for it.
Land Rovers on wedding days look really cool.
Yeah, they do. Your 90 got starring role in someone's wedding, didn't it, last year?
Yeah, like, just over a year ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
That looked really cool. It looked really smart. Like,
yeah. Put all the flowers around the roof rack.
Nice.
Like, I drove down the road and they paid for a valeter to come along and polish.
Taylor, I believe they're called now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Well, he detailed it very nicely.
Excellent.
That was the deal. So he insured it for the week and they cleaned it properly and they knew used it for the wedding. It did look good. It did look good.
Yeah. I remember seeing it actually before it went, and it did, that Coniston green just came alive, didn't it?
Yeah, it's a good colour, that.
It is nice. I had a good selection of Land Rovers at my wedding. I had my Discovery 1 at the time, so that was in the middle. And then my mate's 110, my mate's 90 Challenge truck, Discovery 4, a few others. It's good. It was a good look.
I had zero Land Rovers at my wedding.
Why? What are you playing at?
I wanted to make sure I got there.
So what, did you go in a Hilux or something, did you?
No.
Land Cruiser.
The only Land Rover that was at the wedding was old editor Dave Phillips, who came to my wedding, and he was in his Discovery 1.
Oh.
And that was the only vehicle. Well,
at least he added a touch of class.
He did, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it.
I turned up. Well, no, the wedding was at the hotel, so it was all in place. I didn't need a wedding car.
Oh, I see. Right, got you. Yeah. That's fun, isn't it? Do you know what? One of the most popular photos I get sent in for Month in Pictures, or your pictures in the magazine, is Land Rovers in weddings, and they do just look stunning. Some really, really cool pictures.
Defenders, they're photogenic, aren't they?
Range Rovers. Yeah, just like, yeah. It's nice, isn't it? Heartwarming.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, we'll end on a high, shall we? I think we'll wrap it up for this week. And we will catch you on the next one.
Bye for now.